I need some input from all these clever guys who are here, and you just say, let me show you what I've done. What do you think? And so this would be just announced as an informal presentation, and it does not have to be taped, right? You just tell us that you don't want to be taped and that you don't get taped, right? Not that you think. Not you think that all your speculations are being posted. Okay, thank you. So today, what happened today was that we have been using this room later, but it turns out that this was like a gentleman agreement with the other group, and they have now used the time that they had actually in the schedule and moved their meeting up by half an hour, and so we had a power meeting also by half an hour. So that's why we have this. And Danny's leaving next week. This weekend, right?
This weekend, yes.
So Danny Fimschling from Nancy, not University of California, Santa Barbara. And he's going to talk to us about onset of turbulence for molybdenum convection at hadron collisions.
Thank you. Yes.
And so I think this is work done recently, right?
Yes, and also this work has been done in Professor Aller's group with all these persons that I cite, and they have all contributions, so I put them in alphabetical order. So it just that is the general, so you probably know everything about molybdenum. So the important parameters that we will see today is the Prandtl numbers that will be quite high, and also the aspect ratio that will be low. So just that general diagrams, just to tell you that there was a lot of work done from Fritz Busse on the Busse balloon, and also on the pattern formation by you, and also a lot of work done in the very high Rayleigh numbers, but I think it has been a little forgotten what was on the way to turbulence. So that's, we will focus a little bit on it. So I will just give a brief history of just a few papers, but and I'm sorry if I forget other things. And then we will see the aspect ratio 1 and the aspect ratio 1/2. So I think I have a question. So everybody knows that in infinite systems, the critical Rayleigh numbers is 708, but what is the critical Rayleigh number for an aspect ratio 1/2 cell? So, you know approximately? Yes, higher, but how much higher?
3,002.
As of
2006.
Oh, you're far away. in a cylindrical cell, fixed boundary condition, aspect ratio 1/2.
The answer is?
Yes, the answer is 2.5 × 10^4.
Wow.
Yeah. So we can see, and yes. Yeah. And this has been seen by numerical simulation and also by the linear stability analysis. And it's already well, it's quite well known thing. So, of course, we will see differences when we go to a small aspect ratio. So, the early work that had been done on this was by Ruby Krishnamurti already in the 1970s. So, they had a quite large system with aspect ratio of at least 10. It was a square cell, and they observed many transitions, so from flow patterns from 2D to 3D. They also observed the transition from steady flow patterns to unsteady flow patterns, and they found that this transition have an influence on the scaling law of the heat transfers, and later on they also find some oscillatory motion, and they investigate the pattern numbers.
I should really mention that there's a lot of extensive work by Fritz Busse and co-workers on this general problem, which in the haste of the moment neglected to.
Yes, that's true. So yes, this were her diagrams, and she went that is an experimental work, and she went with the different silicon oils of different viscosity, and so she saw some transition that could be seen in heat transfer measurements. And then we go to time dependent patterns to turbulent flow.
And would they decide
that it's turbulent?
Oh, that's one of the issues, I think.
It's by looking.
Yes.
It's turbulent and you think it's turbulent. Is that how you decide whether the difference is between?
It's not regular.
That's an issue.
It's yes. An issue. It's a real issue, yes.
So she didn't do any heat transport measurements, though, correct?
They did heat transfer measurements.
So just to put this in a Fritz gate and stuff, this higher branch with the coturbulent, is that above these four patterns, or is that,
it's
just a sort of spoke pattern. It's a sort of spoke pattern type of convection.
Yes, they measure the heat transfer, but it should probably not be easy with an aspect ratio that is 10 or over that, but they still have represented the scaling laws of the Nusselt VS versus Rayleigh, and they saw transition each time here and here they see difference in slope. And more recently, there was close to the onset experimental work by Björn Hof, who saw that we can see quite different nice patterns that have been observed. Some were more stable than other one, and that's close to the onset. Particularly, what is often seen is this Mercedes-Benz pattern. Yes. The black is actually the warm plume from the bottom, and the white are the
same with the opposite, right?
Yes. There's one, there is an upflow, here there is an downflow. So there was also numerically, in recently it has been also seen that you could have even more branches and different kind of pattern. This is work from Tuckerman. And that's, yes, they name it pizza and all kind of names. That's... oh, they have many, many more if you look at their papers. Yes, it's only a small part of... And also very recently there is these papers of numerical simulation by Verzico, Srinivasan and Silano, where they investigate in aspect ratio 1/2 what happens in this particular region, so after the onset of convection but before turbulence, and how we go from steady to unsteady pattern. So the onset of convection is 25,000 and is independent of the Prandtl numbers, but after that the transition to steady pattern to time dependent pattern is depends on the Prandtl numbers, but when the Prandtl numbers goes very high there should not be much differences. So this is a numerical work that have been done recently in 2010.
Just time dependent.
Yes, they name it, they pass from steady to unsteady flow.
I don't know, because maybe if you read the paper carefully, you find out what they mean by unsteady flow, and I'm not sure right now what they mean. There's all kinds of unsteady flow.
Right.
So they do not mean time independent? So
unsteady was just time dependent.
Right. That would be the, well, one would think. But that's, you're saying that is not the case.
I don't think they mean, for instance, periodically time dependent. Maybe they mean chaotically time dependent. I'm not sure.
So they don't didn't they be days, I mean, Berger, and I mean, all these people is hunting down chaos. I mean, they did experiments like this, Berger and so on, right? They did low aspect ratio, really, the norm, right? I think in this book, there's a whole chapter on.
Confined geometry is not as confined as
confined.
One half.
Or not so small, you mean?
Yeah.
A little bigger.
Yeah, they have cells, and also order one.
So what do they get? They get about 5 × 10⁶ or something like that. A high Prandtl number?
Yes, close to 10 to 7.
Prandtl 10⁷.
Yes.
Okay, keep that in mind.
Yes. So this is the result that have been found in Gunther Ahlers group by Tal Sharp and other people, and what we can see is that we have quite periodic patterns, and for the same random numbers we could have a quite different pattern. One, it is these are downflow, the white are the hot plumes on the top, and the black are the cold plume from the bottom risings. And so we have quite symmetric patterns, and we can see that the Rayleigh numbers are about the same. So,
what do you mean?
What I mean is that for the
which Rayleigh numbers are the same for which features?
For example, A for B we are 5 × 10⁶, and for E we are
5 × 10⁶.
Yes.
If it's 6.7 × 10⁶.
Yes.
G is clearly a transition between F and G.
But B and E is very similar.
Huh?
I think the point is that B
and E have the same. They look different patterns for the same Rayleigh number.
Yeah.
And as Gunther stressed it, so these are patterns, and then there is a sharp transition into a chaotic regime. Where you have a time-dependent or chaotic patterns, and it gets even more chaotic, and we get to what we think is turbulence.
Right, but is it also true that from F to G, basically, what you see on the bottom, what you see on the top, seems to separate from each other, the dynamics? I mean, these white lines are probably from the, you don't know where they're from, right? You don't know whether they're coming from the bottom or the top.
I think that we can guess that the white is from the top and the black in the bottom.
It's from the bottom. Okay, so they seem to be not aligned anymore.
Yes, that's true. Yes, that's true. This is time dependent. And,
So I'm confused a little bit about the flow pattern that you're seeing here. So for example, in E, it's mostly black. So where's the downflow? Is the downflow diffused over the whole intermediate area? Is that the point?
Upflow along the lines and downflow everywhere else, more or less.
Okay, so there's very weak downflow.
It's also nonlinear optics.
Sure, but
you don't want to take it too seriously. how localized is the downflow and how localized is the upflow? I mean, we don't really know that. Because there are optical effects that do focusing that you prefer not to have.
Sure, but the cold flow, I mean, so I could understand that more on B, where you get the, but the fact that you don't see any white lines in the dark image
would seem to indicate that the downflow is
very diffuse.
Okay. Sort of more jets coming up and then.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So,
I mean, the real message is that between F and G, there's a sharp transition from a pattern to a chaotic state.
And you're saying that if I look for a long time at F, I don't see anything? I mean, it's stationary? It's time independent?
No, it meanders, it oscillates, it does things. Okay. But roughly speaking, it retains the rotational symmetry.
I see.
Whereas G clearly has no rotational symmetry.
Well, it also seems to me that the white line and the black line on F are actually correlated. If you don't know how to measure that, but probably the motion of the white line and the motion of the black line are not strongly correlated anymore.
Yes, I would think so too, because here we have only one white line and we have a still.
It looks more like a boundary layer instability, while the other one looks like a pattern.
And the degree to which these are typical as opposed to special in this time dependence is.
There are movies. Just look at movies and things don't change.
Okay. So they're just small wiggles in F and G looks mostly like that most of the time.
All the time.
All the time.
And what I didn't stress is that we use triethylene glycol, so it's quite viscous. So it's, I think at 40 degrees, it's 17 times the viscosity of water. And since, because of that, we have a high Prandtl number, so 230. And yes, the aspect ratio is one of the cells, and it's 9 centimeters.
So why did you choose such a large Prandtl number? Because the onset patterns should be time independent at the large Prandtl.
Problems for small Prandtl numbers, you get higher Rayleigh numbers, and you
tiny cells
that are shifted to lower Rayleigh numbers, and you will never get down there with measurable delta T unless you make an itsy bitsy tiny cell. It can be done, but
yeah, it's a millimeter cell calculation. The DQ dependence that the Rayleigh number has.
The point to emphasize is that the transition between F and G is at about 7 or 8 × 10⁶, which agrees with the numerical work for aspect ratio 1/2 with to unsteady flow.
Yeah, it agrees with the idea. Okay, and these cells have also sidewall thermistors, so we can measure what is the temperature of the wall, and we can also see the noise, the thermal noise in the 8 thermistors. So this is the average of the noise seen in 8 thermistors, and we can see that there is a really sharp transition when we go from steady pattern to unsteady.
You probably don't want me to ask about that cluster of points.
You can.
The cluster of points is a periodic state.
And on the right side, we have 3 points could come in.
So when you're plotting, there's an RMS value, you think the vertical axis.
Yes, this is the fluctuation of the temperature measured by the thermistors that are in the wall.
Okay, so it's the RMS value.
Yes.
So, but you have another keyboard at the top. Measurement error, this is a real kink. This is not just.
We are probably saturating, I would say.
You mean it's a What do you mean you're saturating? What are you saturating? It's a missile doesn't get saturated.
I think the size of the fluctuation at some point.
Dictate too fast?
It's
an experimental problem.
I don't know. I would say that. When you see a plume going close to the wall, the plumes have a certain temperature, but that cannot grow indefinitely.
So would it go down? I mean, it would be nice to have 10 to the 9 there or something to see what this one would do. Okay.
Okay, yes, that's true.
See, if we would have only plotted it to 7 × 10⁷, I would have never noticed that.
Okay.
It looks nice and straight going up until it's fine.
And in these experiments, in the group of Allersbeit, Sharp, and other person, they also measured the heat transfers very carefully in this aspect ratio 1 cell. And in this region, we have patterns, and we can see that there is a bistability. So we have a difference of heat transfers for the same Rayleigh numbers, 2 different Nusselt numbers in this region. Then when we are in the chaotic region, so this is the region where we are here, so there is only 1 Nusselt number, and in the turbulence that we have also only 1. And these are data from another group, from the group of Keqing Sha, and so they are a little offset, but this is not a bistability, it's just because it's another experiment. And so when you have a plot in a different, more precise, you can see clearly this bistability that we think that it could be two different flow patterns.
Let me just remark that Tal Shah et al., also et al., as well as Tal, were undergraduate students who worked on this project. They had a lot of fun with it.
How do you determine this, whether the state is chaos or turbulence? By looking at by eyes?
Yes, currently we have shadow graph images, and here we can see that we have this main structure that remains. We have a kind of domain walls, and because of that, we think that it's more a chaotic state.
What's the critical value for this aspect ratio? Did you determine?
The critical, it's probably 2000.
It goes up very steeply with at the end.
It should be
4. Yeah. Oh, yeah,
more
like
4,000. Yes, we are using 3,000. So yes, that is the onset of convection.
Can you measure down that far or
in a separate project? It's not covered here.
So we did an aspect ratio 1/2 experiment, and we put thermistors in the middle and a little less 1/4 in the height. In the height, but we only put 4 because we didn't have enough possibility to put leads inside. So it's the same experiment. The cell is also 8.8 centimeters diameter. And we obtain quite a different kind of pattern. So the onset is 25,000. So up to here we don't see anything, but that's we are unresolved, and the temperatures difference is only 0.2 degrees, and probably we didn't focus so far away to see if there was already pattern or not, but with our focusing we didn't see anything. But then at really 1.5 to the 7 we see a very localized patterns that grows in times. But already here we never from this real numbers we didn't see any steady pattern. And after that, we go to more and more chaotic states. And so as for the aspect ratio 1, we use 3 ethylene glycols. So we have the same Prandtl numbers. And up to the largest Rayleigh numbers that we could achieve, we couldn't see a large-scale circulation. And the coherence that could be explained by, is probably explained by the Korov length that is quite of the size of the cell.
So in the third and fourth images, where you see something localized, you cannot distinguish whether that's flow there and nothing anywhere else, or the intensification of an underlying pattern that you're not resolving, correct?
In this, yes.
Well, no, in like the third one, you've got that spot there.
Yes.
But you can't elucidate whether or not that spot is an intensification of an underlying pattern or a localized thing with no convection anywhere.
No, we could localize.
Well, it's
we
localized. Could see it. And then he's going to show you movement.
Yes, it's localized.
That'll answer that question.
But we don't know what happens between the onset and here. It's more in the lower part.
I mean, you don't know. I mean, you see a localized pattern. That doesn't mean the flow is localized. That just means the optics is localized. Because before you showed me flow that I couldn't see. On the left picture, you show me flow that I can't see. And now what you show me is that if you see something in the shadow graph, that doesn't mean that it's the flow. You're seeing the shadow graph signal. You can't tell me that at this region, there's a stronger variation in temperature that you can't resolve.
There is a temperature. We will see. We will see.
I mean, what you see is the index of reflection variation in the liquid, right? Yeah. So you don't see the flow. And on the left picture, you cannot see the flow.
Yeah,
all the way on the left.
We will see the movie. So this is in the sidewall thermistors. So we measured all as previously the thermal noise, and we can see that CH begins at 10^7 as predicted by the paper of Srinivasan and Verzico, and we have also a sharp increase of the thermal noise as but it doesn't turn over, so we are lucky, so we don't have questions. Okay, so this was the pattern that we see, that was the second pattern, and we could see that there is a localized area where it's a oscillatory field, so oscillatory patterns that begins here always at the same time.
I mean, you showed before, you said you didn't have enough optical resolution to see anything.
To see
the only thing you can tell me here is that the strongest structure you see is localized. You cannot tell me, because there's more that going on. I mean, you can
right.
see yeah. that there's more going on.
So that was my question about whether or not.
Exactly, that's what I.
Yeah, there is more going on, but that's.
Exactly.
You start seeing something more on the domain walls,
which you might not have resolved before.
Yes.
Because the temperature gradient might not have been strong enough.
Yeah.
You just don't know. You have to do flow measurements to.
And this movie is 5 hours, so we take an image every 30 seconds, and so it's showing 200 times. And so at the beginning, the pulsation was about 240 seconds, but it's very, very slow.
But this is constant, right?
Yes. So there could be a transient at the beginning, but yes, it should be at constant.
Now you see this line, so.
Yeah, but right at the beginning, you can really see these pulsations that are localized and that comes from very localized.
This is a little bit above onset of what's really called unsteady flow.
Yeah.
Right, as determined by the mean square fluctuations, which have the onset at 10^-7. At 10^7.
Yes.
But, I mean, just as. I mean, I think what you can say is that the shadow graph signal is localized. You cannot say anything about the flow, other than you have to do simulation and calculate, tell me that your shadow graph signal is cut off. But before you couldn't see the black flow in the middle. With the downflow, you couldn't visualize.
Clearly, there are localized bursts coming here.
Yes, you can see and
in the fridge.
Yes, we can see something.
I mean, there may be another structure that is weaker.
Right.
That is unresolved.
Right. So it's like you're taking a threshold, and whenever it gets above the threshold that you can resolve, then you see a pattern, you see that localized feature in the shadow graph signal.
Yeah, I agree with that. Yes.
So there is flow.
Right? Yeah, there is flow.
But the flow could be large scale. It doesn't say that there is a localized lump or something.
Basically, there's just the temperature gradient is strong.
It's strong enough to provide.
That's all I'm saying. I mean,
yes,
it's
right.
Just. Right, not at a loss.
I don't think there's anything profound here.
But what we can see with our thermistors on the sidewall, we can see large excursions. That's quite for a temperature difference of 0.8 degrees. We can see sometimes in the sidewall thermistor that we have a 0.1 degrees of difference. So, and we can see that in the middle and in the top. Thermistors, and so we believe that where they were, these were large plume came up and close to the wall, and that we could see. And so these are localized, and since we know which thermistors is on the top of the other one, we could plot what corresponds to the middle and to the 1/4, right? And we see that, I think we would agree that there is a correlation between what happens in the middle and on the top. That means that these plumes that we see were going all the way up. They don't have destroyed.
If I take a thermistor, this is a thermistor which sees the plume. If I take the other thermistor which doesn't see the plume, then it's flat. On the other side.
Now, what I mean is that these are thermistors that are on the top of each other.
Right, but if I would take now, instead of 3 and 10, I would take 1 and 9, they would look very different, right?
Yes.
As we've seen.
1 and 9.
should also become linear.
Yes, I think yes.
Yeah, but they would look different. They would might be flat at the same time. They would show flatness where the other one shows a peak.
Yes. That's why you have all the nine termites, and some do not show anything. And here we.
So in the one on the left, what is the mean cell temperature at that location? Is there an overall flow, right? I mean, because if there was no flow, then you would expect the mean temperature of those thermistors would be at the mean temperature of the cell.
Yes. It's very close.
Mean temperature of the cell is 40 degrees. And these are off by 40, 50 millimeters.
Does that mean there's an overall downflow that's hard to measure? No.
No.
Because the nodules in this case are very small one.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, there's a difference between the blue line and
This is one.
If you look at the left one between 10 to the 4, 1 times 10 to the 4, 2 times 10 to the 4, you clearly see differences between the thermistors, which before didn't exist, and so there is a variation. It's getting colder there.
Yes. So it's,
at the beginning.
Yes, at the beginning. This has to come down, right? I mean.
Yes, this is. And so this is closer to the top cooling plate, so that's a little higher than the other.
So for example, the red one there, TW12, is a very strong pounder, right? There's this one plug where the red one goes way down. If you look right there, at about 5 times 10 to the 4. No, 1.5 times 10 to the 4.
Okay.
The red one really cools.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, right?
Where is that located in comparison to 10? 12 and 10.
12 and 10, they are opposite side.
Ah, okay.
So we can see that there is a nice correlation and the structures go up, but the transient is very long because it's the quantum numbers are high. And so this is a slightly higher temperatures, and then we had a large rolls that was oscillating for really a long time. Nice structures, and so with another periodic.
And that's above the line of time dependence.
Yes. Their line was from for a real number of 10 to 7.
This is the upflow or the downflow?
The upflow.
Where is the downflow?
Sometimes you can see white. You will see at the end. Sometimes you can see white structures going down.
When you discuss the star pattern that Bob had asked about, we can only see one, in the dark, which is also the flow.
See, for example, right there, that looks like a
yes, you see white thing here.
It looks like an intensification of the signal along that black line, because you could actually see the image of the black. So like right there, it seems like it's an intensification along that overall black line, as opposed to just
Is the sensitivity for up and down flows the same?
No. Okay. We try to focus.
We
don't have the same sensitivity. We try to focus. If you really focus on the bottom plate, we don't see anything.
Look, the basic problem is that with the shadow graph method, you cannot tell whether this is a plume that is coming out of a boundary layer and is localized at the bottom or the top, or whether it is a cell wall between convection cells. You just can't tell the difference.
Because it's such a huge cell, of course.
The main message is that these are not not symmetric patterns. These are really chaotic flows. Okay, so we are above this transition to chaos.
Mm-hmm. And what we could see is that this large plume that was oscillating, we could see that oscillation in the thermistor on the wall, and it also was nearly cutting the cell in two, and so this oscillation can be clearly seen on the two opposite temisters. So you have a W8, and probably since it's we can see on both sides that there was this large W2. On the W6 and 2, that we can see on both sides this oscillation. So this is also at higher, we have a more chaotic regime. So at the beginning there was a transient, mm-hmm. and we can see this domain walls, and sometimes also the tendency to have this separation in 2, 3 or more domain. And there was always the question of how big are the plumes, and of course, since we have a high Prandtl numbers, I think the boundary layer are pretty high and the plumes are thick. So it's really thick plumes compared to what we have in water. Yes, it is tendency of having a...
So this looks not very similar to what was the aspect ratio oneself, right?
Yes, in the chaotic regime.
Lines which seem to be completely decorrelated.
Yes.
Doesn't that suggest that the black stuff is coming from more from the bottom layer and the white from the top?
Oh yes, that's clear. That's clear. Yes, this is a shadow graph method.
Localization of those two, because otherwise, if it was a large scale flow structure, they wouldn't cross, presumably.
Yes.
Right. So
black
is more. Black is the bottom.
They're localized. So one flow is localized. Yes. And
the fact that they cross like that would indicate that they don't go all the way through.
Right.
They must be decorrelated.
And there is no large wind here. Last case, there is no one rolls, one last case. And this is the highest rate number that we achieve, so we should probably focus more close to the bottom plate to have.
You should make this
better.
Color and subtle it to
reduce the shadow graph.
Division of fluid dynamics competition. It's beautiful.
And
it's amazing art.
Yes. And what we can still we can still see the domain wall. That here we have more than two, or we have five or six branches, and. Also, the resolution of the film, we take more images, it's one image per second. We can see that there is no large circulation. And can we say if we are already in the turbulent regime? But probably we are close to, since the Kolmogorov is 0.
Should
really
do that in color.
That's
anyhow,
beautiful. I mean, picture. So the interpretation of these finer lines would be you see the large scale structures which were there before, but now you start to see the turbulence. I mean, you can see the
we're on the way, yes.
The temperature fluctuations of the turbulence lead you to these caustics which are popping up everywhere. And so there's some sheets that are very strong temperature gradients that are inside the body somewhere.
Yes, that's it.
Yes. I mean, it's quite reasonable that, you know, we have with the L-coherence of about 0.3, that right about at the transition from chaos to turbulence. Mm-hmm. There's no sharp transition. There's no indication of it being a sharp transition. Mm-hmm. It's a gradual evolution.
Is it possible to, Gunther, is it possible to develop some characterizations for when and how you have moved from chaotic regime to the turbulence regime? Is it possible to develop some characterizations, you know, I mean, like Leopold has rent or some kind of characterizations that tells you, hey, we now move from chaos to turbulence.
Yeah. Probably want to look at the autocorrelation time of the sidewall thermistors or something like that, right?
Yes, but
that probably decreases in things like PDFs start looking.
It will be a little more difficult because the walls are quite insulating and it happens quite quickly. Before you had always this long, slow motion, then the thermistors could be quickly. But when you look at the thermistors, actually, it's not so nice either.
So,
So for the conclusion, we see that for aspect ratio 1, with increasing real numbers, we see stable patterns and then chaotic patterns. And there is a sharp transition between the stable pattern and then the chaotic flow. But after that, we go smoothly to the turbulence regime. So aspect ratio 1/2. So for very small relay, we didn't, since our cell is too big, we couldn't go very well in the region where we are close to the onset. But we could see the onset of chaos at 10 to 7. And yes, there is no large circulation up to a coherence length of 0.3. And in recent papers from Verzicu and co-workers, they saw the presence of a large scale flow and only one unique rolls at the onset, already at the onset, by numerical simulation, but we didn't observe this one rolls. Later. And I think for the future, how can we define the onset of turbulence, and also what should we do in the future to relate the Nusselt numbers to the flow pattern that we see. Okay, thank you, and thank you for having me.
So if you measure the Nusselt number, you can get an estimate for the boundary layer thickness, 1/2 times the Nusselt number, right?
Yes.
So what fraction of the cell is that when you get to 10 to the 8th or something?
I think that's 10 to 9, so 10 to the 8, I think this is the, it's 7.5, 10 to 7 that we have a Nusselt number of 50. So from before, we probably have a boundary layers that are 0.5 centimeter to estimate. lower.
The Nusselt number is 50. It's yes. Over 100.
Yes, that's the largest Rayleigh numbers. But when we are in the beginning of the chaotic regime, we have probably a Nusselt number of about 20,
yeah.
And so 10 to 20. So that's.
He's right, it's 4 or 5 millimeters at the onset of chaos.
Yeah. Yes, about here it's a few, and of course here it's a, this is a 1/7.
Several millimeters.
Does the cell size
I think we have more and more domains, but the domains, yes, it's we have, or I think this idea that you have the multiple branches of the walls. So the domains of it seems to decrease a little bit, but the cell is always the same size. It's 8 centimeters diameter. But yes, it's true that, for example, later on here we can see quite 4 or 5 branches. So they seem
to. How would the changes made the widths of right C9 or the white?
Oh yes, the white line on the top, I think this is an shadow graph optical problem, but they probably should be at the same size as the black one. But that's just, I think, we focus close to the bottom, that's why we see sharp plume and pretty large, but this actually should be probably similar.
Well,
is small sizes which you see there are all confined to the zonal boundary layers. Mm-hmm. There you see the small structures.
So you don't think they're in the body?
They're not in the body.
The body is
but
mixed.
So presumably then, what you're seeing in the first four images is that the background circulation, which is clearly there because you're measuring finite heat transport, has some underlying pattern, and what you're seeing is the intensification of that overlap, you know, that overall pattern in these localized ways within some sharper boundary layer kind of structure. Yes. Yes.
What you have to appreciate is that we are covering two decades in Rayleigh number with the same geometry. That means two decades in the temperature difference. That means the first few patterns are only a few tenths of a degree.
I'm not criticizing.
No, I'm just trying to explain
why
we don't see the flow pattern.
Sure, but there is one. But we agree, right, that there is one there.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah. Sure.
So what I would now understand is that my interpretation would be that, as you said, we have this, you know, that it's flowing, obviously, otherwise the muscle wouldn't go up, right? It wouldn't get increased. But now we see these coherent structures, which means suddenly this flow starts to talk really strongly into the boundary layers. And therefore you get some kind of locally upwelling, which otherwise wasn't there, so the boundary layers become unstable. Before they were stable, and now they're unstable, now they're localized. So you get localized sheets coming up that talk to the top. So this means below you didn't see much of that, and then finally you really see that the boundary layers are starting to couple to the large scale. Whatever flow there is, I mean, who knows? I mean, how should I imagine the flow where I don't see anything? What does it look like?
Oh, here.
Okay. Yeah, just imagine. I mean, I don't know.
Well, look at the aspect ratio 1 data images, where we did have that.
Well, that's what it would look like. Can you go back?
Okay. You have these Mercedes patterns and
all that stuff. Okay.
Yeah. All that stuff.
Yeah. Yes, we, yes.
So what you're right now investigating is F to G. F you wouldn't see, and G you would see, to see.
But for sure, this regime for aspect ratio 1/2 is really widespread. Because here we can see that...
No, I understand that, but the difference is F we wouldn't see, let's say,
and G we would see. Yes, with a smaller cell, we don't know, but there is a good chance that we would see such pattern with a small cell.
Suppose you can measure a tensile profile vertical. Is it possible that from A to F, more or less, you get linear tensile gradient? And then once you reach to H of or I, that there's suddenly you get an energy, you get not energy, you get a gap in the middle, you have a sort of an isothermal bulk with some kind of a boundary layer on top and the bottom. So maybe there's a translation that from a more or less a linear profile and at H or G somehow you start to see a development of boundary layer.
I don't know. I mean, I think Fritz knows a lot more about this, but where you have these patterns, these four patterns or whatever, you already have a steam thermal gradient near the plates, I think, isn't that right? So you already have something like thermal boundary layers, but they're thicker, obviously.
Yeah, but
the order 10 and so on, and therefore it's really divided between the sharp gradients of the boundary layers and the isothermal interior.
It is already.
But that's known by simulation or by what? I mean, if there's a direct measurement, that would be a very clear cut. When the boundary layer combines.
You can see it from the Nusselt number.
The Nusselt
number is.
You took to Lorentz, he had many, many others.
Substantially different from one, that means you have boundary layers.
No, I say, well, you get the patterns substantially larger than one. I'm quite sure the temperature profile is linear there, right? Maybe eight. I always assume that the chaotic pattern where more or less is the temperature profile is still but to a large extent is
I think it depends if you have the overage temperature profile.
I defer to the experts.
Yeah, but you can have an on overage a temperature gradient, but if you stick a thermistor inside locally, you could see, I think, the passage of a plume. Because I think the Prandtl number is so high that see huge plumes coming and locally a huge temperature. Yeah, but on average,
I'm just saying, talking about the average temperature.
Yes, I continue with.
So in the aspect ratio of half cell, I think you're underestimating the information you have. I think that shift that you saw in the sidewall thermistor is actually indicative of the fact that the large scale flow on the outside is slightly colder and is indicating that the large scale circulation is actually kind of cooled down at the wall.
It's the Stewart's layer that you were talking about.
Well, that comes in rotation, but I think it'd be interesting to just plot the deviation of the sidewall thermistors from the mean. I mean, maybe it is an Amundsen's nest.
I bet you
that there are small differences that are measurable that tell you something about the flow structure of the state that's hard to visualize.
That's true, I think. Maybe you cannot see the difference if it's really non-Boussinesque or if it's really a
Those two effects should be different and calculatable, as Gunter has done zillions of times.
One more general remark in terms of kind of advertising that Detlef gave us in his talk. You know, these Prandtl numbers are more relevant to mantle convection. The Prandtl number is virtually infinite in that case, but we also saw that really not much happens as you go higher than 100 or so. So we're essentially in the regime that, you know, may be relevant to that geophysical problem. And also the Rayleigh numbers are not that different. You know, 10 to the 8 is sort of the Rayleigh number expected in the mantle of the Earth.
So you need to rotate.
Okay, well, thank you, Danny. Thank you very much. And this, I think this is very good. Yeah, thank you.